Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to the... welcome to episode 166 of Nerd Pride Radio. 166, the number of days in the gestational period of a rhesus monkey. Doesn't that seem kind of long? 5.5 months? I mean, I always picture, you know, little animals, shorter gestation, but, you know, it is a monkey, a little, you know, more complex brain and all that. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, that's the fact. And also, 166, the number of megabytes in the latest iTunes update. I swear to God, I just finished looking up the gestational period of a rhesus monkey, and I came up with a great 166 fact, and like, literally, as I close down the internet, what pops up, but oh, my iTunes is still updating, it has 166 megabytes on this download, I could have just used that. Oh, what a saved me all that grueling research. But, you know what, I love rhesus monkeys. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd plus. There's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to have on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, as always, you're listening to the best smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride smells exactly like Burl Ives' beard. I mean, when he was alive, of course. All right. First up, before I even get to the meticulously plotted portion, updates. Yeah, so I went out and I bought Animal House. You guys remember that? And I got it on the multi-pack disc thing. And I got Animal House because I've never been able to find Animal House streaming. So I go out and I buy it, $5. Gives me, you know, other movies with it, and I enjoy it with my family. And it was a great time. And like 2 weeks ago, there's an article on Facebook that says, hey, check out everything that's coming to Netflix next month. And it's a big picture of Bluto from Animal House. Yeah, apparently Animal House is now, the moment I buy it, coming to Netflix. Oh, I just could have waited. Oh, man. But, oh, well, I have it now. And what else? Updates. I also got to remind you guys about the Deadpool, the Nerd Pride Radio Deadpool. This is like our 12th year. I don't know how long we've been doing this. Started in 2004, 2005? 2005. So this will be like the 12th year we're doing it. The Nerd Pride Deadpool is on for 2017. That means if you want to participate, you send me a list of celebrities you think will die in the calendar year 2017, and you get it to me by Christmas Eve this year. If I see it when I wake up Christmas morning, and I, you know what? I probably won't even check my messages first thing Christmas morning. I'll probably have other things to do. You might even have a little extra time. But when I wake up Christmas morning and I check my mail and I look at all my private messages, if your list is in there, you're in the game. And all it takes is make a list of people you think are going to die next year. That's it. And then that's all the work you need to put in for a whole year of fun. So come join us. It is a great time. The more the merrier. We really like doing this. We really want you to be a part of it. So come join us. What else did I have for updates? Oh, updates! I got my new car! Oh, so happy. So, I told you how much I loved the Ford Fusion I was driving as a rental car, and I found a deal that looked too good to be true for a very similar Ford Fusion. I had to drive a couple hours to go get it, and yeah, it turns out the guys we bought it from, the tiny dealership, sleazy dudes. Smarm just oozing from their pores the whole time we're in there. But, you know, we wound up buying it for a couple grand under book value. And before we bought it, we drove it on over to Paul, who is my wife's sister-in-law's brother-in-law. And so not really related to us, but he's family. And Paul is awesome. He had heard we were car shopping. He's like, well, you know, if you're coming down to Lincoln, he said, you know, bring it on over to the shop. We'll take a look at it before you do anything. And so we drove it on over to Paul, and he took it out for a spin, and he got it up in his shop, and he gave it the once over. And I mean, man, he went into a lot of detail. He showed us, okay, here's a couple of cosmetic things. They tried to cover this up, but you know, he said, it's not like the paint's broken. There's nothing big going on here. He said, yeah, you've got this, but he said, that's just an alignment issue. So you get the alignment done, that'll take care of that. I mean, went through everything and basically declared it a clean car, which this was the best part. We went back to the shop and, or the dealership, and you know, we told him we took it for a test drive, told him we had our guy check it out, and said, you know, here's this, and this that we're concerned about. They said, oh, well, we'll take care of those, no problem. And I said, but you know, the engine checks out pretty good. And the look of surprise on the dude's face, because clearly they don't freaking know. They don't, they're turning over cars that they get, most of their cars, they get on salvage title. So they get something that, you know, it stood in flood water and has flood damage on it, or, it's got hail damage, or it's whatever. And they bring it in, they fix it up, they turn it around. And they just look to make a quick profit on it. They obviously don't care for these vehicles. They don't tend to them very well. It's like, you just got to clean them up and get them out the door. And so, and this was the vehicle we selected was actually, a government car that had been used, had been owned by the state of Nebraska. That was the single owner on it. It was clean. There were no accidents on it. This was the one, one of the very few cars they had that was not on salvage title. And so, I mean, like I say, they don't give a crap about these cars. They barely, you know, they do the bare minimum to get them out the door. So when I came back to him with it and said, yeah, well, he declared that everything was good and that the engine was fine. Like I say, the guy just looks surprised. He's like, well, all right, I guess I come out ahead on this one. So, but anyway, we made a deal that everybody was happy with, and I drove home with a new car. And so awesome. I am thrilled with my car. For me, you know, a car is a car is a car. I'm just glad I have something that's newer and reliable and all that. But really the big part is it's got the Bluetooth and it hooks up to my phone. And, oh, I love all the hands-free stuff. I love being able to just pump my podcast straight through the sound system in my car. I just like being in this car. It's so nice. Plus, really good gas mileage. It's getting like 33, 34 miles to the gallon. I'm thrilled with that. It's been a long time since I've had a car that drove that, that well for gas mileage. So good for me. So anyway, I'm happy. It's an awesome day, awesome week. And you know what? Next weekend, Christmas, which means this week is going to be hell because there's all sorts of last minute crap to do for Christmas. There always is, but it means a week from today, it's going to be Christmas and it's all going to be over but the shouting. It's all going to be just looking through Deadpool lists and playing with new games and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be a good week. So I hope you guys are doing well. I hope everything's going great, because now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind in the last week or two, because I missed last week. Sorry about that, guys. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy dandy pocket mod, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So straight into the master list. First up, you know what? I've been putting this off, but kind of got to do it. It's uncomfortable topics. Yeah. My uncomfortable topic is I want to just talk Trump just a little bit. I mean, and there's a million things about Trump out there. And I mean, you can look at the outrage from all sides and you can, who knows? I mean, when they're talking recounts and they're talking about unfaithful electors and they're talking about, his cabinet. Oh, his cabinet's getting all sorts of play. And there's a million things about the way we're going that are really unsettling to me, really disturbing to me. Okay. And as I tell my kids, I hope Trump turns out to be one of the best presidents we've ever had. I hope that at the end of 4 years, it turns out that all of my fears were completely unfounded and that that he turns out to actually get some shit together and that our country grows and we don't go around violating everyone's human rights, and that I hope everything turns out awesome 4 years from now. It does not look likely, but you know what? I want things to be good. But having said all that, one of the worrying things about Trump, and not specifically Trump, but about the people around him, is the way I wrote it down in my notes here. I wrote brown shirts, and brown shirts has a very specific connotation, and it is, you know, Hitler's, you know, before Hitler came to power, and then even after he came to power, the brown shirts were basically the thugs that would rough up anybody that disagreed with him and help enforce order at his rallies. And ultimately, the brown shirts got to the point where these thugs actually became an official part of the government once he gained power. And yeah, scary. All right. Horrible. And I'm not calling Trump a fascist necessarily. But I am saying that his version of the brown shirts is the alt-right internet trolls. It is, I mean, yes, he's encouraged some real life thuggery. I mean, the whole idea of, you know, if some protester gets assaulted at one of my rallies, don't worry, I'll pay for your legal fees. That's, you know, okay. That was encouraging, you know, actual physical thuggery. But these alt-right guys, these internet trolls, they are really scary and dangerous on the internet. And they're making it their job to harass and demonize and harm through cyber means, usually, anyone who speaks out against Trump. I mean, look at Kellyanne Conway. For Kellyanne Conway, her book had one of the lowest possible ratings on it on Amazon before it was even released. And if you went to Amazon and you looked for Kellyanne Conway's book, you would notice that it was one star, less than one star, and that every review that came up talked about, I mean, in hateful, horrible language, talked about what a terrible, terrible woman she is and all the horrible things she's done, and used, you know, vile, disgusting language to do it. And this is, you know, that's just one example of the stuff these people are willing to do. And, you know, make no mistake, the alt-right, they are fascists. The alt-right are openly racist, openly sexist, openly bigoted and hateful, and make no secret about their tactics, make no secret about the idea that they're going to use, lies, and they're going to use, their ability to make overwhelming numbers, or what looks like overwhelming numbers on the internet through repeated strikes. They're going to use that as a tool to harm people and destroy them. And I mean, there's no secret about that. They're willing to use really evil tactics to get done what they want. And they scare me. They scare me really bad, because anyone who wants to make a criticism of Trump has to contend with the possibility that, okay, if I say something against Trump and it actually catches on, if people actually take notice of me, I'm opening myself up for death threats, attacks, people releasing my home address, my phone number, pictures of my children. The one guy, I can't even remember. I heard him in an interview. I heard him actually talk about it, and I can't remember who he is. I apologize to him, whoever he is, but he has an adopted daughter who is black, and the horrible things that they did to this guy because he spoke out against Trump. And I don't even remember if it was against Trump or if it was whatever it was he said, the alt-right went after him, and it was, you know, posting pictures of his child in a gas chamber with Trump pulling the switch. I mean, it was, you know, and that's probably the mildest of the stuff that they put out there. These are scary guys. And taking the risk of getting them to notice you is a scary thing. And I don't, you know, I can't hold it against anybody who's gonna possibly second guess whether or not they want to say something in public, because you have to be ready to take on some shit like that. That is horrifying. And the simple fact that they have this potential dampening effect on free speech is really scary. And the fact that they may have the sympathy of the White House is even scarier, because they're completely in Trump's pocket as far as ideology goes. As in, I don't know how to phrase it all exactly, but the idea that, again, he has shown himself to be sympathetic to them. Simply by having Bannon in his cabinet as his chief advisor. I mean, the sympathy he's showing towards these trolls and their behavior is just, it's horrifying. And so I worry about what happens to free speech under President Trump, because lots of other terrible things may happen. And if they do, as long as we have the ability to continue to speak out, we have the ability to continue to protest, we have the ability to continue to fight for what it is we believe in, then, you know, we'll get through it. But when you get to the part where, you know, he's already made hints that there are going to be certain news organizations that are not welcome at White House press briefings while he's president, that he's only going to allow in people who present his views and his news the way he likes it. That's really disturbing. He's willing to be even less transparent than all the previous administrations. That's scary. Among other things that you might worry about under a Trump presidency, man, freedom of speech is a big one, a really big one. Look, yeah, I know gay rights and civil rights, and there's all sorts of other stuff that we're worried about. Our public education, our health care, there's lots of things you could be worried about. But also, when you lose the ability to speak out about those things, when you lose the ability to communicate the things that you don't like about our government, then you're in deep. I mean, oh man. So anyway, start off on a depressing note, but let's go into more positive stuff. That was uncomfortable topics. So having done with that, let's move on to my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, board games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And the only thing I'm going to talk about this time is Paranoia. Oh, we finally got done with Paranoia. About 7 months worth of email game, 8 months. Oh man, it's been a long time. And we got all done with this game, and I can finally tell you guys what happened. And oh, if you're not interested in role-playing games, and if you're not specifically interested in hearing how Paranoia went, well, you might want to roll ahead about 15, 20 minutes, because I'm going to geek out on this. So here's the deal. Paranoia, all right, supposed to be fair, I should start at the beginning. Paranoia is a role-playing game, which, man, I hope if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you're aware of what a role-playing game is. But it is a storytelling game, and I run it as the game master. So I set the world, I create the story, and then I have a number of players who take on the role of troubleshooters in the world of Paranoia, and they just play out this story. And Paranoia in particular is a role-playing game set in the future. So the story takes place in a future, an indeterminate future, but someplace that has lasers. And the characters all live in a place called Alpha Complex. And Alpha Complex is ruled over by a very paranoid computer system that has ultimate control over everything. It's a very big brother-y sort of thing where they're always watching you, and everything is treason, and you can't trust anybody, and there's lots of backstabbing. And in this game, the main conceit to it is that each character that's in the game has backup clones. So yeah, you start off for some reason I can't think of the names of any one of my characters now. Let's go with Talvin's character, Rip. Rip R. Jack 1. Starts out, Rip 1 is the first character. If Rip dies, then okay, we issue Rip 2. And then if Rip 2 dies, okay, Rip 3 comes out. And in general, the new clones that come out have pretty much the skills and memories of the ones before. So it's, you know, you can die a bunch of times before it's finally all over. So that allows us to have a whole bunch of madcap stuff happen. And usually the game is pretty, the way we play it at least, is pretty crazy. And the thing that is most responsible for players dying in this game is other players. Usually if someone dies, is almost always because one of the other players killed them. And we play it by email, which means it's easy for me to keep secrets that each person in the game only gets to see what their character sees. They don't know who any of the other players are. They don't know what's going on. In fact, they don't even know for sure which characters in the game are actually players and which ones are just me jerking with them. And so they send me stuff by email. I take their moves into account. I try and put everybody's desires together into a single narrative, and then I push that narrative back out to each person so that each of them can see exactly what their character sees. It is so much fun. And I've done this a ton of times in the past. And this most recent one, it was called How Many Troubleshooters was the name of the story. And it is called How Many Troubleshooters because the whole point is they have to change a light bulb. And so how many troubleshooters does it take to change a light bulb? About 30, 40 clones worth. Yeah, somewhere in there. It was a lot. And what I did this time that was unique is normally you play this game and the troubleshooters are, they're like this special forces of the computer. And when I say special forces, I mean they take on special jobs. Not that they're specially skilled, because usually they're expendable people. But they take on odd jobs for the computer that don't quite fit into other areas, or jobs that have had some severe complications and they need something extra. And so in this particular one, I set it up so that they had to change a light bulb. And I did two different teams. Normally, a troubleshooter team is six clones, six characters, and they get assigned a mission, and they get some, you know, usually experimental and dangerous equipment to take with them, and the instructions that they're given are usually vague or incomplete, or there's some ulterior motive to them, and then they have to go out and figure out what to do about it, and sometimes they actually solve the mission, and sometimes they just jerk around until everyone's dead. You never know. In this particular case, I took on 12 characters. I made two teams of six, and I had them each started separately so that each one was given its own separate mission, you know, and each team goes out working together until they finally have to cross paths, and then horrible things happen. And in this particular game, it was all right. Here's where I made my first mistake. When I set up the two teams, I didn't pay attention to which players were on each team. So I had 12 characters, and so I'm trying to divide them up because there's one team that is, and this is a lot of inside paranoia stuff, but one team is being hired by power services, and one team is being hired by tech services. Power and tech, in the paranoia world, they have a lot of overlap, and so they're at odds a lot. And so one team is a power services team that needs to go in and change this light bulb by getting rid of the robots that are screwing everything up, and make sure someone changes that light bulb by hand. Whereas the technical services team is supposed to go in there and find the malfunctioning robots, fix them, and let them change the light bulb. Either way, both teams have the mission of, you need to go change a light bulb. And so when I set up the two teams, I was looking at balance within the game. So I'm looking at, okay, I want to make sure I have an even number of guys and girls on each team. I'm making sure that, you know, the skill sets that, okay, if I've got these people who are mechanically inclined, let's make sure I have this, you know, about the same number of mechanically inclined people on each team. And, oh, here's someone with lots of combat skills. Let's make sure we get one of those on each team. And so as I divided it up, I was just trying to kind of balance all of those factors. What I didn't notice is that I took all of my experienced players who have played the game before, and they all wound up on one team. And the other team was all newbies. Nobody had ever played before. And this resulted in two fantastically different styles of play. It was incredible, because the team that had all of the veterans on it went off gonzo like any other paranoia mission I've ever done. They're immediately suspicious of each other, and Preach, one of the characters was named Preach, and he's played by If you're familiar with Lucy from the Podomatic here, she's also on my website. This is Lucy's husband, and he's played with me many times before, and he is super paranoid when he plays this game.
Is that kind of the point?
Oh God, he is so into it. And so, I mean, he is ultra cautious. Everything is a trap. Everything is going to stab him in the back. And he is always, always of the opinion that he had better get them before they get him, even when they're not really planning anything. Well, he can't know that. Better safe than sorry. And so that team, the power services team, got off to, a very murderous start. They were losing clones right from the beginning because they were all hyper paranoid, having played this many times before and knowing exactly what the other players are always like and knowing exactly what I'm like and the kind of things that I throw at them. They started off hyper vigilant and just the killing started right away. The other team, all newbies. And so, yeah, they're a little worried. They've heard stories. They're being a little paranoid, but they actually looked to find allies and to team up and to make friends, which I've just never heard of in a paranoia game. It seems so odd. We've never done that. I mean, we had people make temporary alliances, you know, and every once in a while you'll find a couple of people that can trust each other for a little while, but then they find a reason that, oh, now someone needs to stab someone else in the back. It just happens. But the tech services team was looking to make friends. They were looking to be nice to each other. They had a much lower death count as a result. And what happened was usually when I start up a game, I have secret missions for everybody. So everybody is a member of some kind of secret society that's working against the computer. Everyone has, you know, some organization on top of that that they work for within the system that is going to give them secret missions that they're supposed to be doing, secret goals, things that they need to accomplish that usually involve stealing from other people, killing other people. They have reasons to be at odds. And I usually do that every game. I'll have tons of these little things I throw out for everybody. Well, what I didn't realize was going to happen to me is with 12 people in the game, it was so overwhelming just to keep up with the day-to-day of getting things moving and putting everything together, I had little time to throw in that creative stuff. I did some of it. I gave some secret missions, and they actually panned out really well. But for the most part, I didn't get a lot of those wedged in there. And those are the things that really turn people against each other, because they've got specific orders from their own personal higher-ups telling them not to trust this person, or that they need to go, you know, steal something from this person when they're not looking, or that they need to sabotage the mission in this way. I give them lots of reasons to work against each other. I didn't do that this time. So again, now here's my newbies who they've never played before. They're looking for friends in this dark, dark world. And I haven't given them a whole lot of reason not to trust each other. So they made friends and it worked out well for them because they survived well to the end and, they got all the way through and they actually technically accomplished their mission. But well, they haven't read the whole story yet, but they'll be getting to that one. But it did show me something because it was a new twist on paranoia. I've never seen the game played out in quite this manner and I really enjoyed it. I like having the deadly twists in there. I like having the gonzo slapstick sort of deaths that occur every once in a while. But the idea that there's also some actual real human emotion behind it as well, I've never thought I could get a proper mix of that stuff. And I really liked it. So it's worked out well. And look, if you just want some examples of some fun stuff that went on in here, first off, I sent, when I talk about them trying to make friends, one of the first things I did send over to Rip, I sent her a bit that, hey, this guy, Dole, the werewolf, Dole has a piece of equipment on him he's not supposed to have. It's really high clearance. It's really treasonous. We need you to steal it off of him and bring it back. And so she went and she found him in the restrooms and she just, no, just outside the restrooms, doesn't matter. And she winds up clonking him over the head and knocking him out and stealing his stuff. And then when he wakes up, she's right there. So she puts on an act that, oh my God, what happened to you? Oh, geez, here, let me help you. They became best friends, like through the whole game. best friends. It was the two of them plus Power. So this is for those of you who know the people who write into the podcast. This is Talvin, Sarah Beth, and Ronster, and the three of them became buddy buddy through this entire game. Until and they even kind of maintained it right to the end. But I was just amazed that here Rip has knocked him out, left him bleeding on the floor, stolen his stuff, and they get, I mean, well towards the end of the game, and suddenly something happens. She gets blasted and her uniform gets shredded, and the stolen piece of equipment that she took just comes falling out and tumbling to the floor right there in front of him. I mean, it's just like laying there between them. After they've been best friends this whole game, and the hurt look in his eyes, truly wounded, oh my God, you? And even then, I don't think he truly understood that it was really her that knocked him out. I mean, I don't think he could actually fully accept that until he got to read the whole story. And the best part is, like, she's all apologetic. She's like, I am so sorry. I didn't know you then. I don't know how to explain. Oh. Yeah, so heartwarming. So anyway, I mean, I couldn't believe it played out so nicely. And the best part, it's all the best part. I keep saying that over and over. Most of the people who played in this game were really good about giving me their intentions and throwing in stuff that was happening in their thoughts or in the background. And so, I mean, as they're talking about it, everything meshed so well. You should go read it. I'm actually posting this up on the forums. So if you're honestly interested in this game, go read it. I'm putting it up in the forums in the Nerd Gaming, and there's a thread in there called Paranoia HMT for How Many Troubleshooters and the rest of the story. And that's where I'm posting them up in chapters and the entire story, everyone's viewpoints, everything that happens to everybody. It's all coming out, and it's really cool. One of my favorites is I came up with a robot who is because we just came across this chapter. So this just happened in the parts that I'm putting out. And I have this robot and he's a scrub bot, which means, I mean, he's basically a mop bucket with a little robot mounted on top of it. And he's got mop arms and scrubbers and brushes and attachments and all this stuff. And he's a scrub bot. It's his job to go around and clean stuff. But because he's essentially just a mop bucket with a little robot mounted above, he's really, especially when he's not full of water, he's very top heavy. And you know, a mop bucket, it's just running on little casters underneath. It's not like he has big wheels or legs or anything. And so this scrub bot confronts one of the characters, D-Rod. In fact, it was D-Rod's character, and confronts him in a closet. And D-Rod happens to hate all robots and wants them destroyed. Well, this robot happens to hate all humans and wants them destroyed. So they were a great match. And so the robot starts calling out threats and he's going to terminate him and, you know, all this big talk. And D-Rod goes over and says, all right, I tip him over because, again, oh, consarn it. How'd you know my one weakness? Because I have this thing about robots, I mean, really big, tough robots that have little teeny tiny wheels, and it's really tough for them to get around. And I don't know why I find that funny every time, but I do. And so literally that's how he defeated it, was he just pushed him over. And now, like a turtle on its back, this poor little scrub bot had no way of getting up until finally he pushed it into a pit and it fell on top of Kyle and squished him. So anyway, the whole thing is a lot of fun. And really funny. And again, if you want to go check out the full narrative, it's there. But I was thrilled with the whole thing. It went really well. I got about a month from the end of this thing when Runanide, that's Lucy's husband, Runanide sends me an email that goes, wait a minute. Have you been running two teams this entire time? And I'm like, oh God, that's right. He's not on the forums. He hasn't seen the player list. He doesn't know. I mean, everyone else, if you're on the forums, you saw the player list. You knew there were 12 people playing. He never came over to the forums, so he never saw any of that. So he just assumed this was a regular team. And it wasn't until we were almost done with stuff that he finally goes, wait a minute. There's a whole nother team out there? That's awesome. It made me feel really good because I didn't think I could spring that surprise on anybody. But it was one of the things I really liked about this was yeah, I quote unquote screwed up by putting all the veterans in one group and the newbies in another. I screwed up by not getting the secret missions out there soon enough. I screwed up. There were lots of things that I didn't, that in retrospect I would have handled differently now. But what it led me to was learning that even in a game like Paranoia, which I have played hundreds of times and had such a good time with for so many years, I found something different in it this time that I'm like, hey, I can incorporate that. I can play with that. This is putting an emotional element into Paranoia. I don't know if I'll ever be able to repeat that, even using the same characters. I don't know if I'd be able to repeat that, but something to shoot for, an interesting twist. So I'm really excited. All right, hold on. I'm going to give a moment of silence here because I think I've got some interference going. All right, now it's time for the science fiction double feature. Science fiction double feature. That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price. And yeah, it's not even two because it's three now because Aiden's here and Aiden watches a lot of movies. So, all right, what's the first one we got going?
Well, let's do them in order of which I enjoyed them.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to start with Rogue One. No.
You're going to go, what, least to greatest?
Yeah. Well, let's start with Moana. It was an all right kids film. Girl on island set out on adventure. Not much else to say beyond that.
Okay. But it was a Pixar movie,
It was a great film. Fantastic movie.
Was it Pixar or was it just Disney animation? I don't remember.
Neither do I.
Okay.
I'm useless. I'm sorry. And then we have Rogue One. Absolutely brilliant take on the Star Wars universe. Anything to add? Because you saw it too.
Okay. Oh, I get to talk?
Yeah, you get to talk.
Yay!
I mean, we're both going to talk because we both saw it.
I really liked Rogue One. Oh, just saw it yesterday. And I mean, I really like Rogue One. It was, yeah, a wonderful addition to the Star Wars universe. It was nuanced and different. It is the first Star Wars feature film that doesn't have Jedi in it, other than Darth Vader. I know he was an ex-Jedi. I get it. Okay, but it wasn't about the Jedi. It wasn't about this... the obvious good and evil sides of the Force. This was about this. It was a World War II movie. It was very clearly a war movie, and they intentionally did stuff to put you in mind of World War II. And these are the good guys, the Alliance, the rebels fighting against this huge fascist empire. And I mean, all the trappings are there, and it. They handled it really, really well, and it gave us a very nuanced look at the rebels, the Alliance, and it was showing that there's lots of people out there who hate the Empire. There's lots of people out there who want to fight against them, but they don't all agree on how we should go about it, and there are very different factions and very different elements that go into it, and... especially with Saul Guerrera, when you see Saul Guerrera's character, I don't want to give away too much. I really don't, because it's. I mean, this is opening weekend. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but it is.
Han dies at the end.
It is.
Hold on, sorry. Darth Vader's Luke's father.
Okay, it is. I thought the metaphor that was Saul Guerrera is very striking, and I really liked that. And I will tell you right off that they introduce a new droid into this movie, a droid as a main character, and hands down...
Best droid ever.
Oh, hands down the best character in the whole movie.
K2 droid is best droid.
Oh. He is awesome. So, I mean, look, there was lots of good characters in this movie. Absolutely. But he was the best. And
K2 rocked it.
And by the end of this movie, I had a great time. I went with the two little kids. They had a great time. And I just, it was really good. It gave a whole lot of world building, getting to see parts of the Star Wars universe that we've never seen before in very interesting ways. I was thrilled. I was really thrilled. I was tickled to death by this movie.
All right. Now, this next review, I'm going to let Mike talk about it first, because I've seen it twice, he's seen it once, and it's a completely different experience depending on how many times you've seen it.
Right.
So I'm going to let you go first and talk about Arrival.
He's apparently the expert, and I'm just a ninny muggins, so...
You're just a plebe.
Yeah, that's right. We saw Arrival, and... Oh, you guys. Arrival's as good as they say. And Arrival is... It's a First Contact movie. If you don't know a whole lot about the movie, great. Keep it at that. There are some spoilers that you can get that will... It's not going to ruin the movie for you, because as Aiden says, he watched it twice, and even knowing the whole movie, it gave him a deeper, richer experience the second time through.
Don't tell them my part of the review.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, but you say it's stupid. So, no. But the whole point is, if you can avoid the spoilers for your first time through, avoid them. And all I'm going to say is, I went into this knowing that it's a First Contact movie, and knowing that Amy Adams' character is the lead, and that she's involved in this First Contact experience because she is a leading expert on linguistics on Earth. And that's why she's being brought into it. That's everything I knew.
Before you watch it your second time, give it a day or two to sink in, and then watch it.
Well, yeah, don't sit there and watch it back to back.
No. Oh.
And I'll warn you, look, for a movie about aliens and First Contact, it moves slow. The pacing, it is very slow, and deliberately so, and I thought it was a better movie for it. It really gave time for a lot of this to sink in, and for you to really be there with them and understand this process and how drawn out it was. And it was, I loved this movie. I really loved this movie. But I'll let Aiden.
As a second-time viewer, the plot is more mind-blowing, if not exactly the same. It's just... absolutely brilliant piece of cinema. And not just plot-wise, but the cinematography is just absolutely mind-blowing. There are scenes where you can't know which way is up or down. Mm-hmm. And it made me physically sick in the best of ways.
Yeah. It was a treat. It was a really good film.
Absolutely brilliant piece of cinema. And probably in my top three movies of all time.
Yeah, it was inspiring. It was really, there was so much to it that as things are revealed and these concepts open up, it was so thought-provoking, and it's like you want to just stop everything and go, wait, I need to take that in before I, oh wait, oh, there's more. Oh my goodness. It was so good. It was so good, and I can only imagine that a second watching, yeah, I can only imagine how much different it is when you kind of, anyway, I don't want to give it all away, but I can't wait for my second viewing of it. It's going to be really good. So, anyway, those are our three movies. Moana, okay, but if I've got kids, I should go see Moana?
It's really good if you've got kids with you.
Okay, I don't know anything about it other than what you just said. But look, Rogue One, I don't even know why we have to tell you about Rogue One, because you're going to go see it anyway. I know you are. But I'll tell you, for me, I saw what seemed like mediocre reviews coming out ahead of time, and I felt like, especially now having seen it now, I feel like the mediocre reviews out there are... I feel it's a little hipstery. I feel it's a people are looking for that. Oh, has Star Wars stumbled again? Oh, God, you don't have to go look for it. Episodes 1, 2, and 3, they already screwed up, and they're now making things better. And was Force Awakens perfect? Well, yes, but I mean, I grant that there's flaws in Force Awakens. I grant that there's some stuff they could have done differently. Whatever, that's fine. But Force Awakens was a blast. It was awesome. I had a great time watching. I can't wait for episode 8. But Rogue One is really top notch. It really is. I can't recommend it enough. And again, I know you're going to go see it already. even if you maybe you've already seen it. But you know, you've got my blessing. Go for it. It's so worth your time. But Arrival, man, be ready to think. Be ready to. It is a different type of movie, and it was unique and wonderful. And I'm so glad I saw it. I'm so glad I have a son who works at the theater and can just take me to this shit. It's awesome. So, yeah, that's you.
Yeah, I got
okay.
It.
My other son doesn't work at the theater anymore.
I was going to say, wait, Jacob works at the theater again?
Right. Well, yeah, it would be nice if I had a son I liked who worked at the theater, but you know what? I'll take what I can get. So don't throw stuff at me. So anyway, that is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. So you know what that means? You know what it's time for? Yeah, you don't say it like that.
Nope, we said it. It's done.
Well, we don't even have R2 ready to go. Hold on. Let's try it one more time. Ready? The Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Bride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Look, not only can he mouth the words over there, but he's mimicking all of my hand gestures because I do the same stuff every single time. Yes, I like to be consistent. So our first number is 96, and 96 comes from one of my favorite viewers. Yeah, I hold on, I'll get there. From Kyle. Hey, I was right, it is one of my favorite viewers. How about that? Listeners. Damn it, we don't have any viewers. Okay.
Hey, we have people who could stare at the bar as it moves from start to finish.
Yeah, yeah, they could. Kyle says, remember Barney Miller? Yeah, of course I remember Barney Miller. I loved that show. Really? What do you remember? Oh, all right. First, I remember Barney Miller, obviously.
No way!
I remember that Ron Glass was in it, and Ron Glass, as always, is awesome. May he rest in peace. Wojciechowicz, Fish, and oh, who was the brainy guy? I don't remember the brainy guy. And I remember they always had someone back in the cell behind them, usually a drunk, but there was always somebody getting locked up and hanging out there. I remember the episode with the lie detector test, and just to prove a point, the brainy guy showed that he could beat a lie detector, because Wojciechowicz, being the dumb guy, he was so nervous and so out of it that he kept failing the lie detector test, because obviously the show had no clue how calibration of a test works. But Wojciechowicz kept failing the test, and so thus the brainy guy had to sit down to it, and he told all sorts of obviously fantastical lies, and he passed with flying colors, and he was showing it's just a matter of self-control, and that there are ways of beating it, and also ways of failing it. And I remember that episode. I don't remember a whole lot else. I mean, there was, man, I know I watched a lot of Barney Miller, and I remember all the characters, but I can't tell you any particular plot. But man, I watched a lot of that. Do you remember Barney Miller?
No, not at all.
Yeah, you have no idea what Barney Miller is. 86. 86 comes from another one of my favorite listeners. And that is Mrs. Darks. Hi, Mrs. Darks. And, oh, by the way, we're not going to do too many Pod-O-Matics because I've had Listener Betrayal open for a week. So who knows what could be in there.
Wait, really?
Yeah, when I didn't do a podcast last week, Aliyah had went out and started a Listener Betrayal, thinking that I was going to be recording later that night, and he was just being funny, and so I've just left it open, and I don't think it's huge. I haven't been reading it, but I did just move it over. I made a comment in it and moved it over. So I don't know what they've said, but I don't think it's a whole lot yet, but we'll see. Mrs. Dark says, what living artist do you want to see in concert but haven't had the chance? Quick, before it's too late. You got anything on this one, dude? Well, I'm glad you specified living as opposed to what dead artist do you want to see in concert before it's too late. Anybody?
anything?
Seen Matt and Kim.
Right? Yeah, look,
there's not much.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of artists that I would love to get a chance to see in concert. But, I mean, look, right now, this is not what you're asking, but right now, more than anything, I'd love to go see Hamilton. Oh, I saw Zen's
pick. That's not an artist.
No, that's not an artist. I mean, I could say Lin-Manuel Miranda, but I don't think he actually performs in the shows that are touring. They've got three companies out there right now that I know of. I mean, I would love to see Hamilton. I saw Zen's pictures when he went, and I'm very, very jealous of that. But an actual artist who I haven't seen in concert, but I would like to. I got nothing, dude. I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of them. There's got to be a ton of them. But you know what? It's way too much work for me to actually open iTunes and take a look at it because they just... iTunes just finished updates, and I'm sure when I first open it, it's just going to be a nightmare. So I'm just going to have to say, I don't know. 15. That was lame. We're both lame.
Are we?
Yeah, we're incredibly lame. I mean, all we had to name was one musical artist we've never seen in concert but would like to. One.
Maybe we're just so not lame that we've seen them all.
Oh, no, that would make you a hipster. Whatever. I've already seen everybody care about.
No. If I was a hipster, I'd say I had them on vinyl.
Okay. F. Mary Kill. Oh, this one's from Daz, by the way. Daz says, F. Mary Kill, Lieutenant Uhura, Lieutenant Savick from Star Trek III, and Lieutenant Savick from Star Trek II. Uh-oh. I don't know the difference. I'm going to have to look that up. Okay. I did not realize that there was a different... actress for Savick in Star Trek III. That's why I was a little baffled, because I know I've seen The Search for Spock. I'm sure I have, but I don't remember it, and I've only seen it once, whereas Khan I've watched how many times? And so my choices are Lieutenant Uhura, and this is unfair. You've specified Savick 2 versus Savick from 3, but Uhura... you have not specified whether it's the current movie Uhura, the earlier movie Uhura, the TV Uhura when she was much younger. All right, F, marry, kill. I'm going to marry Uhura. I don't care which version it is. I will marry Uhura and live with her for the rest of my life. And then I will have my wild night of passion with young, pointy-eared Kirstie Alley from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, because I'm looking at pictures right now, and yep, she was pretty hot back then. Wow. I had a crush on her when she was on Cheers.
Back then.
And we haven't seen Kirstie Alley now? She's slightly different.
Total guilt.
No. Hold on. Wow, okay. I didn't know what Kirstie Alley looked like now, because... Aiden says, well, total gilf, right? And so we look it up and like, oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, she, you know, looks like she's had a little too much plastic surgery. But, yeah, not looking bad these days. But Kirstie Alley did go through a long period where she was much heavier, and she got lots of flack from the tabloids, and her weight was the biggest issue about her. That there was constant
biggest issue.
Don't. You and your fat shaming. You should be ashamed of yourself.
No, it's not fat shaming. It's a pun.
No, I know what it is. I'm just teasing you. I mean, it was literally for 5 or 7 years. If a news article was talking about Kirstie Alley, it was talking about her weight. And here I'm just perpetuating that right now. So, maybe we should just get off of that topic. But either way, Kirstie Alley as Lieutenant Savick from Star Trek II is going to be my night of passion, which only leaves me to kill whoever that random actress is playing Savick in Star Trek III. Oh, God, get rid of her. She's clearly not half the Savick that Kirstie Alley was. So, yeah, down with her.
All right. Don't we have to get the listener portrayal?
I'm sorry. Do you want to get out of here? Yeah, that's what I thought. 34, this will be our last one.
Okay.
34 comes from that person. Nope. This person. My least favorite listener, by the way. Oh, there it is. Oh, it's from Master. I'm sorry, Master. You just got nominated least favorite listener. I feel terrible now. I was actually hoping that I would say, it's my least favorite listener, and then it would be Kyle again, because he has the most entries in the list. But sorry, it's a stated fact now. I can't change it. Tell us an interesting fact about the 12th president of the United States. Oh, all right, that's easy. Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Adams, Jackson, Van Buren, Harrison, Tyler, Polk, Taylor. Taylor? President Taylor? Good Lord, I don't know any interesting facts about Taylor. Let's find out. President Taylor. That's right. You guys are going to sit here and listen to me Google shit. All right? Are you happy? If that bothers you, blame Master. There's a reason he's the least favorite.
Our only president, Zachary.
Yes, Zachary Taylor. 12th president of the United States, a career officer in the United States Army, rising to the rank of major general. I did not realize that Taylor was an army general before becoming president. I knew that we had had others like, you know, Eisenhower and Washington. Jackson and, well, yeah, Washington, but he's kind of a special case.
Is he?
He is. Let's see. Zachary Taylor trivia. Let's see.
He doesn't look like a very joyous man.
The only president to ever be trapped in a bathtub underneath Taft.
Really?
No. Taft. William Howard Taft has. There's a piece of trivia about how he was so fat he once got trapped in the bathtub. And I don't know if that's true or if it's apocryphal. I mean, that sounds like the kind of story that his opponents would spread to indicate that he's so fat and unhealthy that he's not fit to be president or whatever.
How can he run with that weight?
Exactly. Run for president. Yes, I get it. Let's see. I don't know. I know. Here's what we'll do. More Googling. Blame Master. Zachary Taylor trivia. Let's try that. A list of snippets and facts about Zachary Taylor. These better be good. AppleSForTheTeacher.com. Let's see. Born. Well, we don't care about that. Birthplace, Orange County, Virginia. I didn't even know there was an Orange County, Virginia. He was Episcopalian. Does that help? His vice president was Millard Fillmore. I'm not surprised. Okay. Here we go. Never went to college. His nickname was Old Rough and Ready. Because of wearing old farm clothes into battle and living the same way as his soldiers, even as a commanding officer. He was a slave owner, but thought states should be able to decide for themselves. And his favorite war horse was named Old Whitney. No, not Whitney. Old Whitey. He was a racist. Damn it. Okay. Well, I already said slave owner, so I guess Old Whitey is not. Maybe it was just a white horse. Is that possible? All right. This wasn't as interesting as I had hoped. Sorry, Master. I tried, man. I tried so hard. But you know what? It's done. We have got to... Oh, my God. Zsa Zsa Gabor... Did Zsa Zsa Gabor die this year? What? Hold on. My wife just sent me a message asking if Yancey got points for Zsa Zsa Gabor. I thought Zsa Zsa was ages ago. Wasn't that Zsa Zsa Gabor, the sister of Eva Gabor, obviously? Hungarian actress. She was on Green Acres. Green Acres is the... All right, never mind. It's the place to be. That's how it starts. All right, Zsa Zsa Gabor. Oh, my God. December 18th. Oh, my God, she died today? Oh, holy crap. Poor Yancey. Oh, that is so sad. Yeah, this is the year that my wife had Joey Feek, and she's got 8 zillion points, and so therefore, here we're all going to lose all of our old favorites, and the points aren't going to matter because we can't beat her no matter what we do. Oh, this is so sad. But yeah, Zsa Zsa Gabor is dead.
Hey, look, she was worth a point.
Yeah, she died at age 99, but there's a minimum of 5 points, and he already had Castro die, so there's a bonus 5 points for this being his second death. So he'll actually get 10 points for Zsa Zsa and still be, you know, in fourth place. Pizza. Yeah, fourth place. Oh, wow. My bad, by the way. Zsa Zsa apparently puts Yancy into third place. He now has 20 points. So anyway, like I say, we're all done. So I now will turn it over to GLaDOS and let her give a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. You want instructions on how to make your very own Pocket Mod? PocketMod.com. Don't forget that this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Casting the Curious, Me Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends. If you enjoy it, please spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. So don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forum. Oh, which, by the way, I'm down to about 125 on Podomatic questions. So again, not quite an emergency yet, but in 2 or 3 weeks it will be. But anyway, where was I? Oh, that's right. Send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, please send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But of course, to be completely honest with you, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. What else will we do?
Have fun?
We'll have fun. And now it is time for listener betrayal. Before I start every podcast, I go out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I go out to Facebook and I let them know, hey, I am recording. Anything you want to put down, I will read off right at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right now. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, this one is from last week already. Aliyah had started it up, and I've just let it stay open all week. And it looks like we've got a little over a page worth of stuff here from my forums. So, pardon me. Let's get right into it. First one is from Aliyah had, and it says, Mike isn't recording yet, but let's betray him anyway. Mike, what's your favorite figgy pudding recipe? If you don't have one, why not? If you don't want one, why not? Because figgy pudding sounds like some disgusting British thing that involves figs and pudding. So, no, I don't have a recipe because I've never had an opportunity to try figgy pudding. And I don't want one because it sounds disgusting. Does that help? Next one is from Kaz Monster. Kaz says, Sophie's choice, Mike. Do you forgo Christmas cookies or holiday pie? Oh, if I have to give up one, I will let the Nazis take my holiday pie and I'll stick with the Christmas cookies.
Don't you not like pie?
Oh, no, I like pie. I don't like fruit pies, mostly. But
what other kind of pie is there?
There's lemon meringue pie. There's pumpkin pie.
Well, lemon's a fruit. Pumpkins are a fruit.
Okay, I don't like pies that have chunks of fruit in them.
Oh.
But lemon meringue, lemon supreme, pumpkin. There's all variations on pumpkin. There's chocolate silk pie, peanut butter chocolate pie.
You're good. You've explained yourself thoroughly.
There's chicken pot pie.
That doesn't count as a pie.
That's not a holiday pie. Look, I'll get rid of the holiday pie because my mother-in-law makes some of the most awesome Christmas cookies in the world, and she has all sorts of varieties and stuff, and she makes
fudge.
Yeah, there's caramels, and there's fudge, and then there's chocolate-covered peanut butter balls, and there's because seriously – you can't beat my sweaty balls. So anyway.
I can beat your sweaty balls.
Pardon me. I'm sorry about the coughing. So I could not give up the Christmas cookies because her cookies are that good. I can't. I could go without pie the rest of my life. That would be fine. But I can't beat that. So next one's from me, where I realized what they were doing, and I just popped in to say, no, keep going. So these are all still from early last week. Next one is from Eliahad. He says, F. Mary Kill, Holiday Cookie Edition. Peanut blossoms, ginger snaps, or rum balls?
All right, I got this.
Okay.
I hate all three.
What? Wow, you are just sad.
No, right. I don't enjoy any of those.
Look,
maybe
I'm gonna
ginger snap. I could stand to marry a ginger snap.
Really? Really? Because I was going to kill the ginger snaps. No, you know what? No, I'm going to kill the peanut blossoms.
Yes.
Absolutely. I am going to sex up those ginger snaps like nobody's business. And then, I think ginger snaps is more the marrying kind. I would stay with her forever. I mean, rum balls is really, it's got the word rum and the word balls.
It's a one-time go.
I
agree.
Rum balls is a one-night sell. One night stand sort of thing.
It's only funny for so long.
Yeah. So, all right. I will sex up the rum balls, marry the ginger snaps, kill the peanut blossoms. I'm all right with that. Next one is from Kyle, and Kyle says, rum balls. All right. Next one's from Kaz. Kaz says, say this next year you were invited to study a single science. Where would you go and what would you study? In this example, you are considered a fellow in your endeavor and have access to reasonable resources. I would like to become an astronomer at the University of Mars.
Meteorology.
See, that's a good one. And look, I will, I don't care where I go, anywhere with a big-ass telescope, but to study astronomy and interstellar physics, and I would be thrilled. Thrilled with that. But, depends on how long it's going to be for. I mean, because if you're offering me the chance to go and become a fellow somewhere and study any science that I want for, let's say, a year or 2 years or whatever it is, there's lots of sciences I could enjoy. But you know, astronomy would be top, absolutely the top. And the next one's from Kyle. Kyle says, single science. Okay. Next one's for me. I said, just to clarify for everybody, I said, for the record, I'm making every effort not to read this thread before the next recording, which is true. I didn't read any of it. I just posted to say what was going on. But Kyle says, every effort. Oh, he's a dick. so then Kath says, how awesome was it to run Paranoia for 12 people? Also, not as awesome as you, buddy. Aw, thanks, Kaz. Look, running Paranoia for 12 people was a spectacular experience. I'm so glad I did it. I will never do it again. 12 was so many. I like getting a Paranoia move out, like maybe, 3 times a week would be nice. 2 at the minimum, and 3 or 4 if things are going really well. And this time it was minimum 1 a week, 2 if things are going well. It was slower. I mean, it moved, twice as many people moved at half the speed because I had that much more to account for, that many more things to work in. And it was really all I could do. And I always felt bad about it because I always felt like I was a little behind. But in spite of that, still an awesome game. I am so glad I did that. I'm so glad I worked in that many new people, introduced other people to this. And now, of course, I'd like to set up a new game, but my problem is I now have 18 people to choose from, and my next game is guaranteed only going to have 6 slots. I am not going to go over 6 for the next one, and I don't know how to choose because someone's feelings are going to be hurt. This is rough. So I'm gonna get all that figured out, and hopefully a new game comes up eventually, and you guys will hear all about it, and it'll be awesome. And hopefully the people who don't get picked for this game, hopefully they're understanding. Everybody's pretty nice, so I can't imagine there's going to be any problem with that. But we'll see. Next up, Phoebe, who used to be Lucy. Phoebe says, Mike is a genius. Yeah, I am. And if it wasn't already obvious, Paranoia proves it. Sweet. All right. Thank you, Phoebe. I appreciate that. And then Kyle says, paranoia. Ronster says, I'm having paranoia withdrawals. I still had 4 clones left. I want my $2. Yeah, you know what, dude? You did fine. Jesus. You had a great time. And yeah, I'm having paranoia withdrawals too. That's why I'm already thinking about the outlines for a new game, because I really had fun playing. But God, you guys did great. And again, I'm going to keep releasing these chapters. Anyway, we'll get to it. There will be more paranoia to come someday. It's all good. I'm sorry. I'm distracted because, my wife keeps texting me while we're trying to talk here. So I'm going to just ignore her down in the corner of the screen and just keep going. All right. Kaz says, Mike, what was the first moment in the latest Paranoia game that you were surprised at the actions of the teams? Always? I mean, really? But probably the first moment that surprised me was when, right at the beginning, I mean, this isn't a team action, it's just by itself, but right at the beginning, there was a moment when everyone's riding on the elevator going up, and the elevator gets stopped, and there are some orange level clones out there, so they're higher level than everybody else, and they have a malfunctioning robot, and basically they're wanting to commandeer the elevator. Everybody else is already on their way to fourth floor, and these guys are basically saying, we're going to take over, you guys need to get out and make room, we got to get this bot moving. And rather than just acquiesce and go take the stairs, Ronster decides to be a hero and challenge them, which I was just amazed at. And then once he challenges them, they're like, oh, everybody else go. We're just going to keep him here to have a little talk with him. Once everyone else is gone, Ronster then goes immediately full on werewolf and slaughters them all. That also surprised me because again, big risk. And of course, turns out he had no real consequences for it because I was way too busy with other stuff to come up with some serious consequences for wolfing out on higher level clones for very little provocation. But, yeah, it surprised me that he did it and surprised me that I let him get away with it. So, that was the first one. Next is from Kyle. Kyle has posted up a picture of a very attractive young woman, in an outfit that is showing a lot of underboob, she's opening the top couple of buttons on her jeans to show us that clearly she must shave down there. And the slogan on it says, keep calm and underboob. So thank you, Kyle, for that. All right, and the next one's from Kazmonster. Kaz says, Mike, I know you like games that take place in a closed setting. What would you think of setting up a game that reinforces the tropes of the haunted house? I think you'd have a blast with something like that. God, I absolutely would. I mean, even if it was a tongue-in-cheek Scooby-Doo-ish kind of thing, or, you know, playing out any number of haunted house tropes from various horror movies. Oh, I would really like that. I mean, even, I was just trying to tell Aiden the other day how awesome House of 1,000 Corpses is. I mean, it's a B-movie. Granted, it is straight up a B-movie. But House of a Thousand Corpses,
what a great movie.
Yeah, the B-movie was awesome. But House of 1,000 Corpses and its follow-up Devil's Rejects are just, they're some of my favorites. I really like what got done with those, especially Devil's Rejects. But you really need to see House of 1,000 Corpses to appreciate where they take it on the next level. I would love setting up a horror game of any level. I mean, it could be serious, scary horror. It could be tongue-in-cheek sort of horror. It could be, but, oh man, I would have a great time with that. I need to do something like that. I need to, that's not what I had planned for my next paranoia mission, but maybe down the road. Oh my God. All right, something. Anyway, yes, that's a great idea, dude. That's inspiring. Because again, I love enclosed settings. I love putting a game, inside of a prison or inside of a, you know, we've run a zombie game inside of a shopping mall. We've run, I love that enclosed setting where it limits, you know, you have to somehow manage everything that you're doing within these confines. It's a very dungeon-y sort of thing. It's very, you know, and I don't know if it comes from my love of my early experiences with Dungeons and Dragons or if it's just, I don't know. It's just the way I'm built. But I love putting players into confined spaces and letting them work within those parameters. All right, the next one says, it's from Kyle. Kyle says, my family is setting up a murder mystery party with two other families to do on New Year's Eve. This one is set at a 1984 prom.
No, I did not read prom. I'm so sorry.
Yes, he's got his eight children in a murder mystery game set in an 80s porno. So, no, it's a prom, not porn. Your brother's a pervert.
My contacts are not as good as my glasses, and I'm sorry.
So, knowing only that, who do you think the killer is?
It's Gabe.
Which character?
It's Gabe.
It is the gym teacher who is acting as a chaperone. I don't know if it's male or female, but it is the gym teacher who's acting as a chaperone at the prom. Also, how rad was the murder mystery party we did? I know it's LARPing, but it was pretty badass. Yeah, actually, no, the murder mystery was awesome. We had a great time. We had fun making our stupid costumes out of paper and clothespins and whatever we had laying around the house. We had fun doing all the role-playing together. The murder mystery was very well constructed. It was a really well done one, and I enjoy. Although I say it was a well done one, I've never played any other ones, so I wouldn't have any basis of comparison. But it was great. Next one is from me from just earlier today, saying, "Hey, I'm moving this into the proper forum since I'm actually recording now." Talvin says, "Congrats on the new car. How's it ride?" "Oh, pretty good. Pretty good." When we first took it out for a test drive. I mean, I was so ready to love this car, and we took it out for a test drive, and it's like pulling to the right, and it's got this shimmy in it, and I thought it was just alignment, but it's like, oh man, maybe it's just crap. And no, we got it to Paul, and Paul said, "Nah, it's just alignment. No, that's not a big deal. Don't worry about it." Sure enough, they fixed the alignment before we took it off the lot, and it rides perfectly. Absolutely love it. So, let's see. Next one. We're now on the second page of Listener Betrayal. Next one says, oh, it's from Talvin. Awesome game of Paranoia. Once again, what was your favorite moment in the game? My favorite moment in the game is any number of, no, I, all right, the, there's been a couple of times where the spider bots, because the whole reason the light bulb was out in the first place is that the spider bots were reprogrammed to hate light. And so anytime anyone got any light going, and then the spider bots would come along and surprise you, sneak up on you, and take out the light at the last minute and plunge everything into darkness again, I loved those moments. I thought those were awesome. As I said earlier, the human-hating scrub bot was my absolute favorite character in the game for non-player characters. I thought that was spectacular. There's so much. There's so much. I don't know. But like I say, I don't want to give anything away from the stuff that's coming up. You guys will read it all. By the end of this week, we'll have all the chapters out, and you guys will know everything. So look forward to it. Seriously. Next one's from Reginald.
Oh, boy.
And Reginald says, "Hey, Mike." Hey, Reg. "How many times have you played D&D/Pathfinder? If you could answer in binary, that would be fantastic." let's see. How many... I wonder if he means how many campaigns have I played, or if he means how many actual times have I sat down to play a game of Paranoia.
I'm pretty sure he means campaigns.
It would have to be.
Right, it would have to be, because if it's every time you sat down, boy, that's way up there.
I don't know. What if I had 30 campaigns over the years? I mean, so I'm going to... I'm going to say 111000. Yeah, probably. But, you know, give or take. So hard to say. All right, and the next one is from Produce Farmer.
Excuse me.
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry.
Learn to read, buddy.
I'm sorry. Thank you for following along. Reg continues and says, "P.S., I love the podcast, but do you ever feel that the Podomatic and Listener Betrayal is a little Jax filmy? Answer in four words or less, please." I I did it first. Next up, produce farmer. Produce farmer says, I made it. It's been a good few months, but I have betrayals for you. Oh, awesome. I'm really glad you came around. Because I love having everybody here. And produce farmer is one who doesn't come around as often as other people. And so it's always nice to see his bright, shining face. And he says, what nerd lore do you consider to be your specialty? I.e., Star Wars, Pathfinder, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, etc.
For me, it's Zelda, Dragon Ball Z, and Monster Hunter.
Okay. He's got Zelda, Dragon Ball Z, and Monster Hunter. My specialty? I really don't know. Because I'm not... like I said last week, or last episode, I know a lot about a lot of things, but I don't... I'm not the expert on any one thing. And so, boy, that's so hard to say. I could almost say, honestly, the Chronicles of Narnia, simply because I've read them like 13
Nerd.
Times. Well, except that, look, I read most of those when I was still a kid. I mean, I did most of that reading before I got out of high school, and I've only read them once as an adult. And so even those I'm not really an expert on because I don't remember a whole lot of it anymore. What's my specialty? Right now I'm gonna take the easy way out and say Firefly, because I've watched Firefly a bunch of times and it's only a few episodes, so it's not like there's a whole lot of extras to memorize. So I'm gonna go with that one. Also, what's your favorite heavy snow day outside food and drink? We're getting hammered in Vancouver. And
you want to talk about getting snow.
And us wussy West Coasters don't know how to deal. We've not had a lot of snow, but we did get snowed in, iced in Lincoln while we were out car shopping. So we had to get a hotel and stay down there because there was just no driving back. There were trucks falling off the interstate, is how quick and bad the ice was. So, and it's been 15 below for a couple of days in a row now, and it's miserable. But, heavy snow day outside, food and drink. Hot chocolate. Ever since I was a little kid, hot chocolate with marshmallows in it, there's just something about coming in on a cold day and mom's got hot chocolate and marshmallows ready for you. It's just, and I don't take hot chocolate any other time, but if we've been outside working, you know, shoveling the walk, playing even, but if we've been outside in the cold and the snow for a while and we finally come in and we shake all the snow off and we peel off all the layers, having some hot chocolate around is just fantastic, because we don't love you. That's why. Oh, and because you never play outside.
But we shovel the walk for you.
I got stash sickles, man.
Oh God, I did not mean to turn this into a hate on Mike fest. You guys are mean. As far as food, really doesn't matter. Food could be almost anything. I mean, a good soup. Again, it's the liquid. It's that spreading heat and warmth as you take it in. That's good stuff. I wouldn't mind a good chicken noodle soup on a cold day. That sounds pretty good. Produce Farmer ends with, happy holidays, Mike. Hey, thank you, sir. Happy holidays to you up in apparently Canada. So cool for you, man. He says he's from Vancouver. He's over on the west coast of Canada.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Any number of listeners in the Niagara Falls region.
That's right. In addition to any number of listeners I have in the Niagara Falls region. I have a foreign listener. Actually, I have several foreign listeners.
So. I have a black friend. It's okay.
That's right. Lots of my best friends are gay. You shut up. All right. So that is the end of listener betrayal on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerd. So let's head on over to Facebook and see if anybody over here likes me.
I've got places to be, so I'm going to head out.
Oh, wow. I don't think anybody has responded.
I thought I loved you.
No.
Hold on. Let's see how the listener betrayal went over on Facebook. Because I think there's going to be nothing.
We're
Oh, so I can sign off with you?
Yeah, I think this is going to be the end of it,
but
because
I
it says
the apartment.
It says now. Two comments. Yeah, you can go ahead and go. So
I'll stay here and be your person for these two comments.
All right. So Aiden's left and Eli's joined us, but I want to just point out to you guys. You guys know Eli from the podcast, and for the last how many episodes? Everything you've ever heard from Eli has been, I don't know. It's all right. He seemed very edgy and emo-ish, and I understand that he seems quiet, but I've got to tell you guys, in real life, this kid does not stop talking. I mean,
oh, now you think I pull Noah's?
That's right. Oh, yeah. No, you could give Noah a run for his money when it comes to talking somebody's ear off. You at least recognize how much is too much, and you know kind of when to stop sometimes.
Sometimes.
But, dude, you talk a blue streak. So
yeah, especially now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dad.
You're fine, buddy. You're fine.
I have
so it like says that there are two comments for listener betrayal on the podcast, but I don't see the other one, so I'm going to have to figure this out. First, let's put done. There we go. So now it says three comments. Where's the other one? Is one of them like filtered?
You're just going crazy.
Maybe I am, because it only gives me two. This happened last time. Sarah Beth put one up that had a questionable swear word in it, and it blocked the thing for me, and so I didn't get to see it. So let me see if I can find it.
666, and I didn't allow.
Okay, I figured it out, and yes, it's because there's questionable language in it. I have three comments. Well, one is just me saying done.
Can I read the top one?
I have no, you can't. I have two
but
comments.
It has the F word in it.
I know it has the F word.
I want to say the F word.
You don't get to say the F word. This is from Akiva.
Can I say the F word?
You may not say the F word.
Can I say the F word?
You may. All right, here, fine. Ready? You have to read it. It is from Akiva.
Okay. So what is the best rock Christmas song? The Kinks?
The Kinks?
The Kinks, the Father Christmas, or Fears. Fuck Christmas. Yay, I got to say the F word!
Do you feel better about yourself?
Yes!
And the truth is, I kind of got to get going.
First
so,
utterance of an F word on the podcast?
No, that's not the first time we've said fuck on the podcast. But it is.
Didn't it start as a PG podcast?
Yeah, it's a rare thing. All right. So anyway, and it's Akiva's fault for putting it in here. I have not heard either of those songs. I am not familiar, or if I have heard them, I'm not familiar with them. So. I can't really answer your question, and I also can't take the time it would take to go out and listen to them right now because, wow, I've been recording for way longer than I thought, and I'm going to have to get out of here. But that's a great question. I'll let other people throw in their opinions, and I'll listen to them and check them out, maybe answer on the boards, maybe bring it back next week. We'll see. Kyle says, so SeaWorld is forbidden, right? Did you see Blackfish?
No. SeaWorld's a lot of fun. I don't know what you're talking about.
Some feel that zoos are much the same to the point that one Central American country decided to outlaw zoos. I think it was Ecuador. Thoughts?
Ecuador.
Why is the door not to be aqua?
Yeah, look, I get that SeaWorld is right out. That they've done some terrible things. Zoos, it depends on the zoo. There are some zoos that make a point of providing quality habitats with lots of open spaces and stimulation for the animals and providing them with a high quality of life that is certainly different than had they, you know, lived their lives out in the wild, but still a high quality of life and mostly happy animals, one would imagine. And then there are other zoos that provide very limited space and they keep them in, you know, small spaces on cement pads and very, very old style zoos where clearly, the zoos are designed to keep the animals out where the passing public can conveniently see them easily, and it is designed for the convenience of the patrons, as opposed to more modern zoos, which are designed for the convenience and comfort of the animals, and it is the pathways for the people that bring them to spots where they might might be able to spot the animals and might be able to enjoy them. But zoos also conduct a lot of really important research and conservation. No, zoos do not conduct electricity. They conduct orchestras. So
I thought they might conduct trains.
Right. But there's a lot of important research, a lot of important research that goes on inside of zoos, and a lot of conservation efforts that go on inside of zoos, and they've done some very good things for the animal world, and nothing is black and white, and nothing is as, well, except
Whoa,
for...
Hey, zebras and pandas, man.
Actually, I was just going to say orcas, since he started with Siege World. Orcas are black and white, but other than that... Nothing is so... is so simple as all that, and there's good and bad to all stuff, and also I live within driving distance of the greatest zoo in the world, so I'm not complaining about nothing. We have an awesome zoo.
Oh,
so
emus.
That's just me.
Emus are black and white, as well as ostriches.
And some monkeys.
Ostriches are not black and white.
Ostriches? Look up a picture of an ostrich.
Dude, you are going to feel so foolish when I look up a picture of an ostrich. And show you that it is not black and white. What? I mean, have you only seen them in very old films? Is that what's...
No.
I mean, honestly...
That is one duo-colored ostrich.
Okay, that one happens to be black and white. That one, look, is brown
that's,
and gray.
That's a hen. I'm talking about the stereotypical male, as which we look at...
Whoa! So you're saying the male ostrich is the only important ostrich?
Yes. The male ostrich is the symbolic... form of an ostrich.
Right, because the masculine form of anything is the obvious representative of the entire species. What is wrong with you? You misogynistic piece of crap. I can't believe I raised you.
Word of the day, I'm about to defenestrate Mike.
Yeah, well, you can't get those windows open.
Okay,
so,
whoa. No one said anything about getting them open. And also the definition doesn't say the window has to be open.
That's true too. All right.
That's it.
Now we're all done. So that is the end of this podcast. Thank you guys for joining me as always. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday week. I don't know if we'll be recording on Christmas Day or not. But possibly, maybe we'll be recording next weekend.
Yes.
You know what? Probably on Christmas Day we will record, because once all the gifts get opened and everyone's laying around, we've had our holiday meal.
But
we've got some free time.
Do you have a new D&D game to play?
What's more important, playing Pathfinder or recording a podcast?
Pathfinder, god dang you.
That's a hard choice. But we'll probably record next weekend, but I don't know for sure. Either way, I love you guys. Have a great time. Come back and join us next time.
Goodbye, everybody!
Goodbye!
You're awesome. Oh, wait, yeah, that's right.
You didn't pause it.
And say goodnight, R2.
What about the cat?